Hi. We begin our third segment here, our third unit, with a focus on what I call core issues, kind of I experience at least to be the most fundamental issues that have to be looked at if there's any hope to really recover from experiences of abuse. And to start that off, I want to talk today about kind of a family systems approach to thinking about abuse. It's a little bit bigger than that in some ways, but the sensibility is that the abuse, even though initially when you think about abuse, the first things that come to mind are one person hurting one other person, on reflection, you'll almost always observe that there's a kind of system at work here. This takes place not just interpersonally between one person who does harm to another person, but in a bigger context than that. And it's that sort of larger context and abusive system that I want to talk about. And while most of the examples will be about abusive family system dynamics, all the material I'll be talking about applies just as well to any sort of abusive institutional dynamic. So it could be the dynamics in the workplace, in the church, in a small group. There's lots of, on a ministry team. There's lots of ways in which the social dynamics of abuse can dominate our relationships, and that's the focus. This is not. I should probably give you a heads up about it, but I at least do not experience this particular presentation as very cheerful. It's pretty dark. And the next one as well. I just want to assure you that we will be getting in this class to how you get out of these kind of dilemmas. How do you get out of this horrible box of abusive family dynamics and what it takes to do that. We're going to use a simplification to get at this stuff. It is a simplification. I'm actually very fond of simplifications if they actually give you of functional and useful handles on things. And the simplification we're going to talk about is we're just going to talk about roles in abusive systems. So what are the sort of roles that are available for people to play in these little horrible dramas? And of course, the first two are pretty obvious. There's always going to be one person or one or more people in the role of victim. In an abusive system, and there's going to be some person or persons who are in the role of abuser, and sort of often, again, our first instincts are, well, that's all there is. But I think you saw enough from the videos we watched last week together, the one on incest, and particularly Tamala's narrative in the intervention episode, and the video about the different kinds of abuse at the children's the residential children's school in West Africa, to have a sense that the problem here is not just owned by the person who's been abused. That is, you can't really get at the whole problem by just looking at the harm that's happened to that person, because there's lots of other things going on here. These are very systemic kind of problems. Everybody's impacted. And two of the roles that we saw repeatedly in those videos are the two other most common roles in abusive systems, the non-protective person role and the hero role, or the messiah role, sort of a spiritualized language set for the same thing. Let me talk a bit about this. We saw let's talk maybe about Miss America Marilyn and her narrative in the incest video. She was clearly the victim in that family system. She thought she was the only one. It turned out not to be the only one, but in her reality, she was the victim and her father was the abuser. And there were her mom pretty much fits the non-protective person role, one of the more striking things about that entire video, to my mind, was the sort of absence of any information about non-protected people in the lives of any of the main people in that video. They're just kind of absent, which is not an uncommon way to describe non-protective people. But there was a mom there who didn't notice. And there was, in Marilyn's narrative, there was also someone obviously in the hero role. It was her boyfriend. It was, he was the one who was graceful and got it right and knew what to do. And we will, as time goes on here, see a rather dark side to that role. It might seem like a more pleasant way to be in a system like this, to be the hero, but it rarely works out that way. And in Tamala's story, for example, Tamala was clearly in the victim role, and the person who sexually abused her as a child was not on the scene in the narrative. It was not her stepfather who sexually abused her as a child, but he was present in the narrative as an actively abusive person. He was abusing her spiritually and emotionally in a variety of ways. So he's in the abuser role. You have her mom, again, in the non-protective person role. She's sort of a deer in the headlights kind of stance, didn't know quite how to do what needed to be done, and sort of in, I think, obedience to the authority of her husband in that particular household, sort of stands back, letting him to continue to spiritually and emotionally abuse her daughter. And again, there's a hero in the narrative. It is again the boyfriend. Tamala's boyfriend is the one person she trusts. Now, of course, you get a rather darker sense about the hero in the Tamala narrative because she's pretty angry at this guy. I mean, she loves him, she trusts him, one of the few people she feels safe around, but he just always wants to talk about things, and it makes her very angry. She's angry at the abuser, and actually doesn't express much anger at her father, her stepdad, but does express anger at her messianic boyfriend. Now, let me emphasize a few things about these available roles. Again, I've already emphasized this is a staggering oversimplification in the real world. Abusive family systems and abusive institutions are much more complicated than this. But it's a simple sort of handle that I find to be really helpful. The first thing I want to emphasize is that abusive family systems are extraordinarily stable and resilient systems. They can persist over long periods of time. They can persist intergenerationally. And a part of that resilience, that staying power to abusive systems, comes from the fact that these roles, all of which are, I'm going to argue, extraordinarily painful ways of being in the world, all of these roles can be assigned to different people. That is, you don't have to have any particular qualifications to be the victim. You don't have to have any particular qualifications to be the Messiah, or the non-protective person, or the abuser. You can be assigned to these roles without reference to anything about you. And this is not the kind of system where the system says, let's look at you personally and make an assessment as to what your skill sets are, what kind of things you enjoy, what kinds of things would help you to flourish. No one here cares about flourishing. It's just not possible to think about that in this little box. So it's just, you know, if there's a vacancy, we need to fill the vacancy to keep this system stable. So for example, an abuser is no longer available, let's say there's an abusive family system and the abuser's in jail or he dies, Well, the abuser can be replaced. We can recruit someone else to fill that role. I'll just offer a simple example from my own pretty dysfunctional family experience. My dad was the sort of classic abuser in our family systems, emotionally and verbally abusive to everybody in the family system. And he was so for most of his life until really quite late in his life. He had a series of small strokes and a series of other problems that made it very, very difficult for him to acquire the sort of energy that it takes to fulfill the abuser role. It takes a lot of energy to abuse other people. You have to be on your game and kind of, it's just, I think it takes a lot, some significant mental capacity to sort of arrange things so that you can get away with that. And he just couldn't do it anymore. So that really destabilized my own personal family system, and somebody had to step up to the plate to, fill the vacuum of abuser in the family system. And in my case, it was my mom. My mom took on many of the responsibilities of the abuser role after my dad experienced a series of strokes and became really quite dramatically more shaming. As long as she felt an obligation to fulfill that particular role obligation. Now, it was not like she made a decision to do that. This is not something that we think through cognitively or say, well, someone's got to do it. It doesn't go through that part of the brain at all. This is just a deeply instinctual thing that people in a system like this experience. It just kind of happens. All of a sudden you notice you've been reassigned by the system to a different role and you find yourself doing things differently. This is actually a very, very common dynamic. Let's suppose, you see it in cases of domestic violence all the time, where you have a woman married to a violent husband, they're the victim and the abuser. The abuser's gone, in jail or dead. And the victim says, well, I'm going to get on with life. I'm certainly never going to be in another relationship like that again. And 5 years later, you find that they've married another abusive person. Or someone who marries an alcoholic, goes through a divorce, swears on a stack of Bibles, they're never going to marry another alcoholic, and 5 years later, gets married to another alcoholic. And it's sort of confusing to outsiders how that might happen. But the point is that when the abusive person is missing from the system, people will unconsciously recruit people to fulfill that role. And it's the same for people in any of these roles. So you had in our videos last week and the week before several examples of family systems where the victim was no longer available and that role got replenished. Someone else was recruited to fill that role. And I'll have some examples later about hero messiahs who get recruited into things. So it's a very resilient and stable system, and part of that strength and resiliency comes from the fact that if there's a personnel problem, you can put anybody in a different role, irrespective of what of their personality or their personal needs. It's just not about them. The system needs somebody else to be in that spot, and it's going to be you. Sometimes when there's a vacancy in an abusive family system, people recruit from the inside of the system. Somebody who's already there gets reassigned to fill a different role. And sometimes they'll recruit from the outside, try to get somebody else in. That's the most common way in which heroes get inducted into abusive family systems, adopted into abusive family systems. It's the most common way in which pastors get involved in abusive family systems is that someone in the system invites them in to be the hero, the one who's going to fix everything. And it's not a pretty picture when you actually get in there, as we'll see. The second thing I wanted to mention about abusive family systems is that the system can sustain itself even if there's no active abuse going on. That is, the sort of dynamics that are in place here. Most commonly, for example, if the abuser disappears, they die or they're in jail. If the problem was just that person's behavior, then the problem would be solved when they're gone. But what you find is the problem is not solved. This way of being, this way of living in the world, is still sustaining itself. And the people are still finding themselves stuck in these very restrictive and death-dealing kinds of ways of being. And the solution to the problem of an abusive system is not just getting rid of the abuser. That doesn't fix the system, because the system will eventually replenish itself and find someone else to be in that role. Probably my main point today about abusive systems is that once you're in a system like this, you can get reassigned to different roles very easily. And you might want to get reassigned. And the reason you might want to get reassigned is all of these roles are horrible roles. These are not a human scale roles. They're just horrible ways of being. But if you're inside the system, they're the only options that seem available to you is moving to another one of these roles. So you get really sick and tired of being sick and tired of being a non-protective person. You hate yourself for that. Can't live with it anymore. You're going to try to find some other way to be, and these will be the only options available to you. I'm going to go sort of exhaustively through the options available to people once they're in this kind of system in the hopes that you'll develop a sort of sense of smell again about what it looks like to try to find another role. Let's start with the person in the victim role and ask what other options. If you just get you're done being a victim, what other options are available to you? Well, one option available to you is to switch to the abuser role. This is the whole hurt people narrative. Might be able to think of this as searching for a way to survive in an abusive system, but not in the role where you're the one getting hurt all the time. If you're sitting there in the victim role and you're the one who's always getting hurt, it might seem like the person who's doing the hurt is not getting hurt very, very much. Now, I think the evidence is quite to the contrary. The people in the abuser role are profoundly traumatized and hurt by their own behavior, for the most part. I know there are sociopathic abusers who have no access to how they've been hurt, but that doesn't mean they haven't been hurt by being an abuser. It's a horrible way to be in the world. But if you're in the role of the victim, it might look pretty good over there. At least you're not getting broken bones. You're not getting that sort of obvious shame stuff, and you just can't do it anymore. So you gravitate over there. Find some way to move over to a more powerful role. Not everybody makes that move, but it's not an uncommon move to make, and it is, of course, a move within the system. It's not a move out of the system. It may feel like it's a way out. It's going to feel like I'm moving to a place where I'm not going to get hurt quite so much. So it feels like it might be part of the recovery process. But it's just another way of being in the system. And it doesn't lead out. It leads to a rather darker place. The other options available to a person in the victim role, one will become to try to switch to the hero messiah role. And what this looks like is, I've experienced a lot of hurt. I've been damaged a lot, but I'm going to make lemonade out of lemons. I'm going to turn this into ministry. And, you know, there's something quite wonderful about the instinct to sort of bring good out of trauma. I have on my bookshelf quite a large stack of books of sort of personal narratives about people in abusive family systems who, you know, shifted from the victim role to the hero role. They're now, you know, turning it all to ministry, being helpful to other people. And most of them feel to me very much like books that were written too soon by people for whom, who got, thank God, you know, sick and tired of being a victim and says, I'm not going to do this anymore. What other options are available? I'm going to be the one who helps other people. And it would be great, and in some cases that may be part of the way out of the system, but for most people it's just kind of shifting roles a bit within the system, because the demands on the hero, on the Messiah, I mean, Messiah is pretty tough role, pretty big shoes, you know. And what happens is that I think the danger in this shift is, I think it's true for, it's certainly true for me, I suspect it's true for all of us, that I would much rather help you work on your issues with respect to abuse than have to work on my own. Right? So if I can move out of the victim role into the helper role, then maybe I won't have to work on my own issues so much. I can just be helping other people with their issues. And if that's what the move is, it doesn't look very pretty after a while. It looks that, like just another kind of stuck, because I have I've made a move within the system that gives me some temporary relief from you know, asking the hard questions about my stuff, but doesn't really put me in a place where I can be very helpful to anybody else, because I'm still within the system. That's the main limitation of that move. It's also possible to a shift to the non-protective person role. In the video on incest, well, we saw an example of that, where I'm having a senior moment about the lady's name. It's embarrassing. You know, who was the woman who in the end winds up taking her granddaughter to the beach. I love that scene. But she was abused by her dad, and later in life found herself in the non-protective person role with respect to her own kids. She did not protect her kids from the person who had abused her. And experienced what people in non-protective personal role often experience. The victims are just as angry at them, if not more so, than they are angry at the person who does the abuse. So that's sort of moving away a bit that non-protective people do, sort of keeping this at arm's length, you know. There's an enormous amount of appeal to it if you're in the victim role. It feels very disorganizing, very confusing, lots of drama, and it feels like that non-protective person role gets to back up a little bit. It gets to have some distance. It looks better over there. Now, in the end, it's not better over there. It's another kind of, it's just a different face on the abusive system dynamic. Not really a pathway to a healthier way of being. The healthy way of being is getting out of this whole box, this whole circle, if you will, oval. Okay, let's look at the opportunities available to abusers. You know, like all the other roles in an abusive family system, the abuser role is really painful. It is an inhuman kind of role. You you feel, if you feel at all, which you might not because it's so painful, you feel like dirt, and you have just as much shame as anybody else in the system. And you get tired of that. And one move available to you is to move to the victim role. So you'll find abusers all the time who say, well, I'm really the one getting hurt here. I had an example fairly recently, someone saying, God's forgiven me, so now the victim's job is to forgive me. If they don't, they're hurting me. Okay, this is the way the abuser is trying to slide over into the victim role and present themselves as the one who's really getting hurt here, because the victim's being so abusive about their withholding of forgiveness, for example. We'll spend the whole time talking about forgiveness, but it's a way of sort of being able to do some more abuse, but from the victim role, I'm the one who is really getting hurt here. There's lots of ways in which people try to make that move from abuser, because it's very painful to be abuser, and when you're sitting in that role, it looks better over there. It looks like you don't, you know, everybody doesn't hate you over there. People actually might feel some empathy and some compassion. That looks really good when you've been sitting in the abuser role for a while. And so you find yourself gravitating over there. Another option for abusers is to gravitate towards the hero role. This is extremely common in family systems where there's domestic violence. There's an incidence of domestic violence. Let's just do the classic oversimplified version. The wife gets hit by the husband. The wife goes to the emergency room. By the time, I'll just do it as a personal narrative because I did this many times. By the time the chaplain gets down there to talk to her and ask her, what are you going to do? She says, my husband's a changed man. He apologized so sincerely and repented before God for doing it. Promised it'll never happen again. He's going to be the kind of husband that I've always wanted, my hero husband. And so, of course, I have to go back and be with him. It's my obligation before God to go back and be with this person who's really been, this time I think he's really been transformed. I think he got it this time. He sees clearly the error of his ways and has made the move from an abuser to a hero. Now, to an outsider, that seems, if you've been around that very much, you probably seems as psychotic as it is. It's certainly disconnected from reality, and primarily because it's just a move within the system. You can move back just as easily. It's not getting out of this system. It's not getting out of the abusive family dynamic. It's just this temporary reassigning oneself to a place that feels less painful than the abuser role. I can't stand being in the abuser role now. It's too painful, too dissonant with my self-concept, so I've got to somehow make ministry out of this. I'm going to be the good guy now. And if that were enough to change things, great. I've never seen that happen, to be honest with you. Because I do think fundamentally it's not getting out of the system. It's just shifting roles within the system. Finally, there's possible for an abusive person to lean into the non-protective role. I think we had a very good image of what this looks like in the Tamala video, where her stepdad was always sort of backing away. You know, he couldn't. It was, you know, and of course this is reading into that. It could be a lot of things, a lot of anxieties, no doubt. But my suspicion here is that he knew at some level he was either in the abuser role, not that he was probably conscious, I doubt that he was conscious of how abusive he was being to his stepdaughter, but he must have felt at risk of being accused of being in the abuser role. He does ask, that's not being too preachy, is it? Remember that? So there is some sense that he might have some anxiety about being in the abuser role, and his solution to the problem is to back away a little bit. That's someone in the abuser role trying to find a safer place to be in the system. It looks like it to be safer to be in the non-protective person role. Until, of course, you've had enough experience in the non-protective person role and realize that it's the same stuff. It's the same shame. It's the same self-loathing. It's all stuck within the system and is not a way out. All right, I promise to be exhaustive about this. Let's look at the roles available to someone in the hero-messiah role. The first is for a hero-messiah to... option is for the hero messiah to become a non-protective person. This is what I call the trajectory of the burnt-out social worker. Those of you who have worked as social workers may recognize this. You know, you're overwhelmed, your caseload's ridiculous, and people are beating up on you. Victims are telling you that you're being abusive, and you just get You work hard, you work harder, you work your hardest, and you get tired. That's what you get for working harder, working your hardest. You get tired, and when you're tired, you just can't quite do it anymore. And if you're in the system, the place that seems a little bit more restful is the non-protective person role, where you back up just a little bit, you know? You know, and it feels like maybe that's the Satan's safer place to be for right now. You know, over the short term, there might be a sense of relief by shifting over there. But over the long haul, it's all ink in the system. It's just a deck chairs on the Titanic kind of move. And it doesn't help you really find a different way of life. It just gives you some temporary relief before you notice how awful it is up here. Next possibility is that the hero messiah could be becoming a victim. There are certain ways of talking about the messiah role where being the victim becomes a pretty high value. You know, I would rather suffer, sort of suffering to protect someone is seen as heroic. And heroes love the heroic. And sometimes... it can feel like being a victim has an heroic edge to it. After all, people sometimes do tell narratives about victims that make it seem less painful than it really is. You know, we sort of remember inspiring victims and forget the suffering that's sort of palpable and tangible in that role. I will talk about this it more later because this is a particular move to which pastors are quite susceptible. The messiahs can also shift fairly easily to the abuser role or be reassigned to the abuser role, whether they want to be in the abuser role or not. If there's a vacancy there, if you're in the messiah role, you know, sorry, the next day you might all of a sudden be the abuser. But if you're kind of been in the messiah role long enough to be tired of it and to, you know, realize this is not working and just sick and tired of being sick and tired in that role, it feels like you're not really being appreciated. And you might find yourself saying, how dare you not appreciate all I've done for you? Can you hear just the beginnings of an abusive edge to that? You know, kind of an emotionally abusive speech. How dare you not appreciate how much I've done for you? And that's one example of the sort of dynamic of the hero moving over into the abuser role. Finally, let's look at options available to someone in the non-protective person role. Earlier I talked about the move from hero to non-protective person as the trajectory of the burnt-out social worker. Going back the other way is also really easy. You get a second wind. You know, you get maybe get enough relief up there in the non-protected person spot that you can come back and you're going to, this time, you're really going to be a hero and meet everybody's expectations and have everybody like you and all of that. And again, is deck chairs on the Titanic kind of thing. But I've seen people go back and forth sort of frequently enough and quickly enough to cause, you know, lots of emotional whiplash going back between, back and forth between a hero and non-protected person role. It's an easy switch to make. It can happen overnight. It's also possible for non-protected persons to quite easily gravitate towards the victim role. After all, I didn't do anything, but people are accusing me of things that are just as and are as angry at me as they are at the abuser, and I didn't do anything. So I'm the one that's getting hurt here by people making all these saying these horrible things and being so angry at me when I didn't do anything. This is the non-protected person and the victim competing for the victim role to an outsider. It just looks bizarre. Why would you compete to be the victim? Well, it only makes sense inside the abusive system. To someone who's got any kind of distance from the abusive system, it looks nuts. You know, why would you be competing to be a victim? Well, you compete to be a victim if you're sick and tired of the other role. If you're sick and tired of being a non-protective person and all the anger that is directed towards people in that role, all the shame, it may look more attractive over there. All right, then finally there is the non-protective person who's sick and tired of being in that role, can't manage to make the move to hero or victim, and says, you know, I'm getting beat up here, maybe even more than the abuser. I might as well be over there, or at least I have some power. I mean, the abusive role, I'm going to punish the people who've been hurting me, right? I mean, there's a sense of justice and so on attached to that language. That, you know, it's just not fair the way I've been treated up here. And that is a sort of a step on the way towards operating out of the abuser role. All right, so, you know, you've got here a great oversimplification. You have four roles. All of them suck, really. I mean, all of them are horrible ways of being in the world. None of them are helpful. All of them feed on each other. And you can get moved from one role to another very, very easily. And I want to give some examples of that. I'll use myself as an example. Just a little bit of the narrative from my own struggle with the abusive systems. And this comes from a period in my life when both my wife and I were working on our abuse issues for the first time. So it's quite a number of years ago now. Both of us were raised in profoundly abusive systems where all these dynamics were quite prominent. But it was a period in our marriage when she, although we were both raised in very abusive families, my abusive family system did not involve sexual abuse, and hers did. And it was working in the narrative was a time when she was first working on her childhood sexual abuse issue. So she kind of had a lock on the victim role. I mean, I had nothing to compete with that. So she's, you know, clearly she is the identified victim in our little family system. And so I'm looking at what's available in my psyche, you know, what have I internalized as possible ways of being in the presence of the victim, and asking myself, well, which of these would be the best role for me? You want to guess which role I chose? I mean, it's pretty obvious. I don't want to be a non-protective person. That's not okay. I don't want to be an abuser. That's not okay. I'll be the hero. Thank you very much. You know, that sounds like it matches my skills and giftedness. So I'm going to be the best husband of someone struggling with childhood sex abuse issues. I'm just going to be present and accessible and understanding and compassionate. And, you know, You know, and that looks really good for a while. It really does. So you get some strokes for that. Thank you for being willing to play the role of the Messiah in this little drama. But after a while, you start to realize that this is not sustainable. That I'm getting tired. That I'm getting hurt. I can't do this. It's kind of a terrifying. Now that sensibility that I can't do this could be a step out of the system, because everybody here is playing roles that are inhuman in their scope, and all of them need to say, I can't do this. So it could have been part of a move outside of the system. In my case, it really wasn't. Not yet. Not yet. I hadn't given up on the system. And so being in the Messiah role, tiring of that role, not knowing what to do, wanting to be a more heroic hero than I had a capacity to be, I found myself upon occasion just a little bit taking half a step back towards the non-protective person role. Now, my wife had pretty good radar about that kind of thing, you know. As people in the victim role often do, they sort of, you know, well, why are you moving away? What's that about? You know, I'm counting on you to be in the role to which you've been assigned in the past, and now you're doing something different, and I don't know whether I can count on you because you know, you're not in that being the protector hero kind of person. You're sort of half a step away. Which felt to me like an enormous accusation. After this. I mean, how dare you, after all I've done for you? Okay. So I started in the hero role, in the face of exhaustion and human limits, found myself gravitating up to the non-protective person role, and then fairly quickly thereafter, found myself being accused of being an abuser. You are not taking care of me. You're not doing the stuff that I need. You're hurting me. Which was very hurtful to me. To be accused, because what it sounded like to me is, you're an abuser. And so if I'm getting hurt here, I feel like I have some entitlement to the victim role. So I went, can happen in a within the course of a single conversation. It can happen over weeks, over months. It can happen over and over again. But I went from being hero to being non-protective person to being abuser to being victim. And it gives just an example of what happens very, very easily in abusive systems is that. Sort of role assignments are not fixed and can change with incredible speed. Now, that sort of starting off in the Messiah role, the hero role, is a particularly important drama for pastoral ministry, because if you are not already part of an abusive system like this, if you serve in a pastoral role, you will be invited to participate in systems like this. I can guarantee this. You will be invited in, because pastors are invited in. And if there's a vacancy in an abusive family system for someone in the hero role, you know, if you can get the pastor to buy into that, you are way ahead of it. That's amazing. You got the pastor. That guy's got she's got a shot at being a good hero. And you might think initially, wow, people are treating me really good, very respectfully. They have high hopes for me, and I really want to do a good job. Okay, so that starting point is the starting point of a world of pain for people in pastoral positions. If you don't smell that, if you don't know what you're getting invited into, it can turn bad very quickly. I know pastors who have turned from a hero into abuser overnight. It doesn't take long. If there's a vacancy in the abuser role as well, it can happen very, very quickly. Now, all that's pretty dark and discouraging, isn't it? I mean, it's sort of, once you're in there, it feels like you're just stuck in there, let me suggest. And we will talk about this much more in the next segment. It doesn't have to be like this. There are ways out of this system. It's a resilient system. It's powerful. It's, it sustains itself over time, but it's not necessary. It doesn't have to be like that. And I think one of the tricks to seeing that, and it's very hard to see once you're in there, this is all you see. It just this is the world as you know it. This is the known universe. You know, as far as the eye can see, it's this is what you see. And so there has to be someone on the outside sort of calling you out. And that's, I think, one of the ways in which the ministry of the Holy Spirit works in life. It's not so much that God comes down into the middle of the system. It's that Jesus comes up to the edge of the system and says, follow me, we're getting out of this. You know, become a part of the community of people that's following me, because we're going to set up systems that are really different than this. It's not going to be like this. It's not going to be where everybody's just juggling shame all the time, where all the roles are painful roles. There's a better way to be in the world, and there's an invitation to come out of Egypt. Apologize to all of my Egyptian friends, who I love dearly, and remind me not to forget that Egyptians saved Jesus' life when he was two, and we should still be grateful. Still, there is a God calling us out of this particular Egypt, if you will, to a saner, more graceful, more rich and rewarding way of being in the world. Okay, I think I've made these final points. If you're not a member of an abusive system, you will be invited to participate. Most of the time, particularly for pastors, it'll be an invitation to be in the Messiah role. Switching roles within the system is not progress. It's not the way out. It's just, deck chairs. Finally, if this is what you've got, and this is like as much personal testimony as anything, is if this dynamic is a significant part of your guts, as it was for me, you'll find it everywhere, because you will notice it. You will know how to fit in to other kinds of abusive systems. I found that I had an incredible capacity to find very abusive religious systems. For example, I had a radar for it that was quite staggering. And, often the pain of an abusive family system gets compounded by experiences with other abusive systems, which are often quite seamless in their pathology. So you have this abusive family dynamic where abuse dynamics dominate, and you also have a church family where the same sort of dynamics are going on. And that's one of the things that makes it feel like this is all there is. This is the known universe. I can't imagine it being any different. And which makes it all the more important that we talk about these kinds of things. And we say explicitly what the biblical text does not hesitate to say, that God has better plans than this. God has a lot better plans than this. People in this system may not be able to hear that right away. They may not want that right away, because like all of us, what we know is what we, change, even good change, makes us really anxious. So we may, want to keep things stable in here. Sooner or later, there'll be an opportunity to make some chinks in that armor, to chip away at the resistance to finding a more graceful and sane way to live. And that's our calling in ministry, I think, is very often to both to hold up a mirror to the pathology of all this, and also to say with the clarity of the gospel, that it doesn't have to be like this. That God has never wanted this for any of us. It doesn't have to be like this. It's not where we're headed. And we're about the business of creating communities that offer an alternative to this. Not that we don't make mistakes and screw up in all kinds of varieties of ways, because we're just broken, damaged, hurting, struggling, missing the mark folks. But we're at least headed out of this particular mess. Well, I'm really feeling a desire to close in prayer today. So that's what I'm going to do. Father, thank you so much for the clarity of your word, that your plans for us are better than this horrible mess. Give us a capacity to trust your graciousness, and that you are not in that box, but outside calling us out into a healthier way of being in the world. Give us the give us whatever we need this week to take a step in following Jesus in that direction. We ask it in his name. Amen. Thanks, you guys. I'll see you in the forum. Bye-bye.